The Inner Voice Show is a dialogue between the host and the listeners about their relationships. This show is not an attempt to assess, diagnose, or treat any mental health or illness condition. Please consult your physician, psychiatrist, or psychotherapist for personal matters.
Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. Now, this is a show about what matters most in our life, our minds, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, achievements, fulfillments, and this beautiful journey of life. Now, in this show, I'll bring you the latest research about violence. And then we're going to talk to Linda Graham, which she is a psychotherapist and the author of the book Resilience and Powerful Practices for Bouncing Back from Disappointment, Difficulty, and even Disaster. How awesome. And we're going to talk to Vida Ghaffari, who is an actress. So we're going to have a great show. You can call us and talk to us or to any of our guests. You can call at 951-922-3532. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hello, listeners, this is Christopher from The Christopher Show. Hey, if you missed one of our shows here at KMET, don't worry about it. You can go to our webpage, and that's KMET1490AM.com. Go to the homepage, click on the SoundCloud tab, and hear any show anytime you want.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Welcome back, everyone. Talking about the Life Reset that you just heard, I have created a 12th session that we go through the book for you. And that's a coaching session that I have. Go to my website, Fujian.com. It's close to half price. I've brought it down really great, great price for you. So anywhere in the world where you are, I'm going to do the coaching with you online. So go to my website, Fujian.com, to learn about how you can get that book with me working on every single chapter together. A couple of announcements. That was one. The other one is go to www.knightsofthejack.com. You will be so impressed. Knights of the Jack will be more than your traditional Halloween attraction. Yes, it's getting close. Vast grounds of intricately hand-carved and illuminated pumpkins will welcome visitors as they make their way through a half a mile trail around the ranch and will be open to all of the Los Angeles people who are in close to Calabasas or anywhere. You've got to go wherever you guys are. You've got to go. This is the first time in LA that this is there. So they have land of dinosaurs. They have under the sea installation, turtles, sharks. It's all pumpkins. I'm not kidding. And all lighted up. It's just beautiful. A lot of celebrities there. Matt Damon was there with his family. A lot of the good celebrities are coming in. So if you want to see celebrities and the pumpkins, you've got to go. Knights of the Jack It's open to public. It's been from October 11th. We'll go all the way through November 4th. Times are 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Go to knightsofthejack.com and get it. The prices are really good. Tickets are available for like $25, and children under 12 are free. So go for it. I think that you will really, really enjoy it. Everyone that I know that has gone, it's just been amazing. They've really enjoyed it. So let me tell you about the latest research that just came out, and I got it from Science Daily. A study published today in the BMJ Open Journal done at McGill University shows that in countries where there is a complete ban on corporal punishment of children, there's less fighting among young people. Now, there was 31% less physical fighting in young men and 42% less physical fighting in young women in countries where corporal punishment was banned in all settings, compared with those where corporal punishment was permitted both at school and at home. In countries where there was a partial ban on corporate punishment, such as Canada, US, and UK, where corporal punishment is not banned at home, for example, spanking or any type of violence is not banned at home, the level of violence in young men was similar to that of the countries with no bans. Can you imagine that? Even partially does not work. So only the countries that completely banned it, whether it was home or at school or anywhere else. So previous studies have shown that in clear relationship between childhood spanking and a host of negative outcomes later on, ranging from aggression to mental health problems. In this case, however, the researchers caution that they see an association, not causality. But I think that it's important from this study, what we can take away is that it's important for all of us to know that if you are violent at home, if the parents are violent, whether verbally, physically, emotionally, that violence is going to get role modeled by that child, and therefore they will show up whenever they feel powerless. They're going to use the same methodology to be powerful with the outside world, and that's how violence just continues to go. So if you don't want a violent family, violent society, you need to start from yourself and creating a more peaceful way. Now I have my love button. This is from Dr. Habib Siddiqui, the Love Button Movement. You can go to lovebuttonmovement.org and look at all that they do to create peace and love around the world. So go check that out and create some peace for yourself. And we're going to be right back with Linda Graham, who is an experienced psychotherapist who integrates modern neuroscience, mindfulness practices, and relational psychology in her international trainings on resilience and well-being. She's the author of Resilience and also Bouncing Back, the winner of 2013 Books for a Better Life Award. Visit her on lindagrammft.net. We'll be right back with her.
Check us out online at KMET1490AM.com.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan. Dr. Fushan has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet stream.
Dr. Fujian Zane is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fujian has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fujian.com. That's www.fujian.com.
Hello, listeners. This is Christopher from The Christopher Show. Hey, if you miss one of our shows here at KMET, don't worry about it. You can go to our webpage, and that's KMET1490AM.com. Go to the homepage, click on the SoundCloud tab, and hear any show anytime you want.
I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and you are with us in Inner Voice Show. I am so excited to have Linda Graham, marriage and family therapist, experienced psychotherapist, who is also the author of Resilience. I have her book, been going through it. It's an awesome book, Powerful Practices for Bouncing Back from Disappointment, Difficulty, and Even Disaster. Welcome to my show, Linda.
Thank you, Dr. Fujian. It's really wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
I've already told our audience who you are a little bit. Now, Linda, let's talk about resilience. Let's first talk about what do you mean by resilience? I think people have different ideas about resilience, and they think that maybe resilience is something that it's either innately there or not, or they just can't, you know, they can have resilience up to a point, but not enough. So could you please tell us what resilience is and what do you mean about it?
Okay, so what I mean about resilience is our innate capacities to cope with adversity, with challenges and crises. And those qualities are innate in our being because they're innate in our brain. So we know that resilience has traditionally been thought of as our capacity to cope with external stressors, and the severity of the external distressors might determine our resilience. So in other words, it's going to be different if we're coping with a fender bender than if we're coping with a car accident where we caused an injury to a car accident where we caused the death of a child. So certainly the severity of the external stressors is a factor. So is the strength of our external resources. Can we call on family? Can we call on friends? Can we call on finances and medical help? But the neuroscience is coming in and showing us that it's the inner qualities that we can cultivate, grit, determination, courage, compassion, clarity. And we can cultivate those qualities because of the brain's neuroplasticity, that the brain can change and grow new circuits lifelong. And one of the key capacities of the brain is response flexibility. So it's really the capacity to see what's happening, see our reactions to what's happening, shift gears, shift perspectives, and be able to come up with different responses, wise responses to whatever we're facing. So as my colleague Frankie Perez says, how you respond to the issue is the issue. And in the book, I try to provide exercises that will strengthen that capacity of response flexibility so that people are able to cope with any level of disruption, from barely a wobble. You know, you leave your car keys and wallet on the kitchen counter, and 2 minutes later you find them again, and so you rewrite yourself pretty quickly, to the more serious sorrows and struggles that really break our hearts and sometimes break our spirits. So people lose a job, or they lose a relationship, or they lose their home, or they lose their health. But then to the really overwhelming trauma of too much, when too much happens all at once. So you get a diagnosis of lung cancer and an aging parent has a stroke and a pipe bursts in the kitchen and half the house is flooded. So when that happens, I want the skills and capacities that we're training in this book to be able to take people from the small annoyances of daily living all the way through the kind of catastrophes that upheaval our lives and completely overwhelm our coping mechanisms so that people can not only bounce back, but they can bounce forward, perhaps, into a new a new life.
Right. When you talk about flexibility, and it's interesting because most of the people who are facing some sort of a trauma or a condition, many times their natural response may be even becoming more rigid, becoming like more controlling and not having the ability to kind of like move along with what's going on. So some people who become frozen in the time of a trauma or an issue, they might lose their flexibility. And I know that as far as the resilience goes, that one of the key points and components that you talk about is flexibility. Can you also tell us more about the concept of flexibility and how it works in the essence of resilience?
Right. So when you're talking about people either They're in their survival responses, and they may be activated into fight flight, or they may be numbed out into collapse or withdrawal, and we're trying to help people come back into the range of resilience in their nervous system. So we're trying to increase that response flexibility, that range of resilience. When you're talking about some people become more rigid, more defensive, and that's what my colleague Bonnie Badenoch calls neural cement, where the brain isn't able to take in new information and learn and respond differently. But people can also go into too much chaos. I mean, they're not thinking very well at all, or what Bonnie calls neural swamp. So what we're trying to do is provide both the stability and flexibility within the brain and how the brain is operating so that we can, in fact, have that secure base of resilience inside and respond to things quickly and reliably. The tools that I'm teaching try to strengthen that structure of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, in ways that are safe and efficient and effective, so we actually have that secure base of resilience within. So what I mean by flexibility, we know that the brain has an innate negativity bias. We are evolutionarily hardwired to pay more attention to things that are dangerous and threatening and unpleasant than we are to pay attention to things that are safe and pleasant and nourishing. And that's for our own survival, for our survival and the species survival. So in order to overcome that negativity bias, the contraction, the reactivity, the rigidity that you're talking about, we do practices to calm down the nervous system, breath, touch, movement, visualization. There are a lot of tools to re-regulate the nervous system. But then we also use practices to shift the functioning of the brain out of that reactivity or negativity. And some of the best practices to do that are actually cultivating positive emotions, and that may be counterintuitive. But when people practice kindness or compassion or gratitude or awe or joy or delight, it actually shifts the functioning of the brain out of that rigidity back out into openness, into receptivity, openness to learning, optimism, and the direct, measurable cause and effect outcome of practicing those practices is resilience.
So Linda, there's also this concept of, as I'm hearing you, this is coming up for me, I've been through a lot of trauma. I work with a lot of clients who have trauma. And there's two sets also of how we handle trauma and anything that shows up. I think one is handling it at that moment, the way it happens. And then after we survive the event itself, for example, an accident or, you know, we have earthquake here. I was through the earthquake or illnesses or even the shock of understanding an illness or knowing that you have it. So first is the shock of that moment and having the resiliency to find yourself out of it. And then it's the maintenance and if it brought you down and the impact of all the trauma that happened. And then how can you rebuild your life through your resilience into, you know, homeostasis state of where you were before that incident. And these two take different types of skills that you also kind of talk about in your book, right?
Right. So it, to me, the trauma of the moment, and also to begin that process of trauma recovery, I do offer steps in the book to do that. The first is accepting reality. This is happening. Accepting reality is one of the most significant predictors of people coming through trauma. And then it's to pull in people as resources, people as refuges where we have a safe place to be, we're protected, and as resources that can help us actually reactivate and find our courage again. Something that's counterintuitive, again, is to find the positive, even in the midst of a catastrophe. If there's an earthquake, if there's a flood, if you're standing around waiting for the police to arrive with a car accident, to be able to focus on a warm cup of coffee, the smile from a friend or the hug of somebody, being able to just enjoy being alive, to bring in the positive even in the midst of catastrophe helps reset the nervous system so that you can respond more skillfully, more adaptively. Over the long haul, I do encourage people to build these skills and strengthen these capacities ahead of time, to pre-wire the brain so that we're less likely to go into stress and trauma when something happens. And so one of the key tools that I teach people to do that is hand on the heart. It's very simple, very basic, and calm down a panic attack in less than a minute. But when you put your hand on your heart and you breathe deeply into your heart center and you breathe a sense of ease and goodness into your heart center, and then you remember, you're doing this ahead of time, you're practicing this ahead of time, you remember one moment when you felt safe and loved and cherished with another human being or with a pet, and you get that feeling of feeling safe and loved and cherished, and you let that wash through your body. That is activating the release of oxytocin, which is the brain's hormone of calm and connect, safety and trust. It is the brain's direct and immediate antidote to the stress hormone cortisol. So when you have oxytocin flowing in your system, you're much more likely to come back into the range of resilience. The researchers have found if you cultivate that practice enough ahead of time, you can even preempt the stress response. You can preempt the trauma response. Something is happening and your body doesn't go into that stress or trauma response. So I really encourage people to practice these tools ahead of time, rewire the old responses that we have that may not work so well anymore, and be more prepared to do the accepting, the reaching out for people as resources, the cultivating the positive, and then, of course, finding the lessons, finding the meaning of whatever is happening, which is one of the biggest tools people have for coming through trauma.
So I, when you said that, to put my hand on my heart, I did. And it does. It feels like a connection that happens. And then the deep breathing and bringing the somatic concept of connecting with our body and allowing yourself to calm our body. I think it's just, it's an amazing concept. So first, when we're facing any issue that brings up our fright response, flight or fright response, the connecting with our body, letting yourself know that I'm here, it's okay, I can calm myself down. And I think that you're very accurate about when we do this as exercises every day, then we find the most effective way that we actually can calm ourselves down. I remember at one point I thought if I just keep telling myself I'm calm, I'm calm, I'm calm is effective. But when I did biofeedback, I saw that the amount of calmness that actually I got by just virtue of, you know, that mantra was minimal in comparison to when I closed my eyes and I actually imagined myself in a safe place, in a beautiful place, and I connected by caressing my arms and putting my hand on my heart. And I saw how much different that immediately calmed me down and my body down. So if people do this as some sort of an exercise, which is consistent for them, then when they go into a space of fear or trauma or something happening to them, that they know how to handle their body. You also have spoken about an emotional intelligence and social intelligence, where they can utilize those in order to get themselves ready for any event that happens, but also support them in the resilience of what has happened before. Can you talk a little bit about the emotional and social intelligence that you talk about in your book?
Right. So I'm appreciating what you're saying about being able to connect the body and the mind so that we can be more resilient. And emotions are a big part of that, because all emotions are a signal to pay attention to something important is happening here. And all emotions activate us to take action in some way that's going to be helpful. So if there's anger, we're moved to protect ourselves from danger, protect the people we love. If we're frightened, we'll move away from danger or toxicity or people who are dangerous or toxic. If we're sad, we'll pull people in for comfort and support. So one of the best ways I've found to work with emotions is the mindful self-compassion practice that was developed by Christopher Germer and Kristen Neff, where you simply put your hand on your heart, take a moment to say, oh, this is hard, this is scary, I'm having trouble here, and then begin to say the phrases, may I be kind to myself, which automatically breaks that interruptive, you know, it interrupts the survival responses. May I accept this moment exactly as it is? May I accept myself exactly as I am? May I give myself all the compassion and courageous action that I need? So we learn these tools, hand on the heart, creating a safe place, the whole idea of mindful self-compassion, the common humanity. I'm not alone. I'm not the only one. Other people go through this as well. So we're using all of these tools to bring a kind of equanimity, equilibrium to the body brain so that we can, you know, think, we can, the higher brain comes back online and we're able to shift perspectives and think what we should do. In terms of the social or relational intelligence, I'm saying that there's both relational intelligence within ourselves. Do we relate to ourselves kindly, or do we have an inner critic that is just shaming and blaming ourselves for everything that's going wrong? How do we change our relationship to ourselves? And then also, how do we change our relationship with other people? Do we trust ourselves to trust other people? Can we actually find the compassionate companions we need when times are dark or when we're feeling overwhelmed and in trouble? So all of those tools are designed to help the prefrontal cortex stay online, help us make decisions and figure out what we're going to do, but from a place where we feel secure and trusting within ourselves.
Linda, I also wanted to ask you something about previous traumas as a childhood traumas. I know that there are a lot of study that have shown that when children are raised under a lot of stress, whether the stress is poverty or a household and parents who are either violent or on drugs, that one of the concepts that actually happens is that the resilience goes down, and people are having a higher level of stress inside, which kind of does not allow them to handle traumas more and more as an adult. So these are some of the research. And on the other side, I've also seen in my practice, and I've also seen in my own life, that sometimes when people have gone through traumas and have survived it, they've also created a resiliency, some path of coping mechanism as a child also, that sometimes it helps them. I've actually seen some people who are traumatized as a child have highest level of resilience as an adult. They've gone through different types of traumas and can handle it much more than someone who has never had any upset. They're kind of, you know, were raised with no conflict. So can you talk a little bit about the difference between when is it that a childhood trauma can create more of a resiliency or even less? And what are the differences?
So I'm going to answer this question in three parts because it's a big question. People do become more resilient when they have mild to moderate stressors and they learn how to cope with them. Fall down 7 times, get up 8. So we do learn to be resilient from experience. That's true. We learn that we can cope with things and we can claim ourselves as being resilient. But we're talking about 2 levels of trauma here that could happen in childhood. One is attachment trauma, where the person just simply doesn't get the care, the protection, the connection, the sense of belonging, the sense of importance, the sense of self-worth from their caregivers. And so their capacities to regulate their nervous system, relate to other people, regulate their emotions are somewhat compromised. And that can all be healed by other relationships, whether that's therapy or coaching or good friendships or a good partner, where the person can recover that sense of being connected, belonging, of value, of worth. So those, we know that those early attachment experiences do impact the development of the brain. As the prefrontal cortex is maturing, it's impacted by whether people are having those optimal experiences or insecure experiences. So sometimes we just need to recover the capacities in the brain to do those skills. What you were referring to earlier, the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, that showed when in childhood there's been emotional, sexual, or physical abuse, if there's been neglect, if there's been violence or addiction in the home or in the neighborhood, then each of those traumas impact the child, and the more they have by the time they're 14, the more compromised the development of the brain is. So that's important to remember. It isn't just psychological. It isn't just that people have a lot of anxiety or fear. The brain is compromised to be able to cope. And so it's harder for people to learn the skills they need to manage their nervous system, to manage their emotions, to know how to relate to people, to know how to make decisions. And so that's why pretty much all trauma therapy is body-based, because that's where the early childhood trauma memories are held in the body. And the person has to feel safe in their body before they can begin to feel safe in their being and then safe in their world again. So that kind of childhood trauma therapy can be extensive. Obviously, it can sometimes be verbal, but more and more nonverbal techniques are being brought into it, which is why the breath, the touch, the movement that I'm talking about is so essential.
Yes, very much. And I think that what you're doing with this book is so important for people to know and have the tools to be resilient. Sometimes also I've noticed, Linda, that people who have been traumatized in one way or another, or not even if they didn't call it trauma, they went through conditions where they created a particular coping mechanism with that coping mechanism, then they can be resilient. But if you take it away from that, or there are conditions which that coping mechanism might not necessarily work, they haven't really expanded who they are to that flexibility that you talked about in order to find other ways and other means of taking care of themselves. So the realization also of that flexibility to practice with their body and, like you said, the emotional intelligence, the social intelligence, knowing that you can get resources from outside, learning new ways of handling life. I know that in one aspect you said in your book that shit happens and a shift also can happen. And I remember somebody else said shit happens and, you know, can we make fertilizers out of it? Can we actually take on what happens and learn from it and make ourselves stronger at every moment based on the experiences that we have and learn from those experiences? Because if we survived it, obviously we did something. And whatever we did, if we identify it, we learn from it, then that's ours. Those tools are all ours for the future happenings, whatever it happens. So
you're pointing to we need more than one tool in the toolbox. That's part of the response flexibility and the resilience, is to have more than one tool in the toolbox. And so that would bring me to the reflective intelligence, the capacities of mindfulness to notice what our tools are, what our skills are. Are they working or are they not working? What could new options or new possibilities be? So the mindfulness allows us to see how we already experience, how we already respond to things, and open us up to new possibilities as well. So all of these tools, body-based, emotion-based, relational-based, require a component of conscious awareness so that the learning actually goes into the brain. It actually gets encoded in a neural circuitry.
Yes, absolutely. So for everyone who's listening or watching us on KMET TV, please go to Linda Graham's website, which is lindagraham.com. MFT.net. MFT is Marriage and Family Therapist. So Linda Graham, G-R-A-H-A-M, MFT.net. And definitely buy her book, Resilience, Powerful Practices for Bouncing Back from Disappointment, Difficulty, and Even Disaster. You can probably also get this on Amazon and other places, but go to her website, lindagrammft.net, and you can also work with her. Linda, where are you? What location are you?
I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh, and great. So whoever's listening to us, you can also go to her in her San Francisco office. It was a pleasure to have you. I'm sorry due to internet issues, we couldn't have your beautiful face. But we do have your beautiful face of the picture with us and the picture of the book. So people who are watching us, they can see your picture and the book. So thank you for being with us. And hopefully with the new books that are coming out, we'll have you back on the show.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Take good care of yourself and everyone. We'll be right back with Vida Ghaffari. Don't go anywhere.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Dr. Fujian Zain is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fujian has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fujian.com. That's www.fujian.com.
Check us out online at KMET1490AM.com.
Take KMET 1490 AM with you everywhere you go by downloading our free smartphone apps found on the KMET website, KMET1490AM.com. You can also go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store on your phone to download the free app. Now you can listen live or play any of your favorite programmers' podcasts using your smartphone. Don't miss out on the free KMET smartphone apps. Go to KMET1490AM.com and download your free phone app today. KMET Banning.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet Stream.
Welcome back, Ed. The beautiful guitar that you are listening to is Ardeshir Farah and Strauss. And you can go to farahandstrauss.com and listen to their amazing work of art with flamingo. They're just amazing. But guess what? I am so excited to have Vida Ghaffari on right here. You can see her. Hi, Vida.
Hi, good afternoon, Doctor. It's such an honor and pleasure to be guesting on your amazing show.
Oh, it's so nice to have you. Now, let me tell people who you are. I'm sure they know you, but I want to tell them anyway. So Vida has been an active on the Tinseltown scene as an award-winning actress and voiceover artist. This acting powerhouse, yes, this acting powerhouse, Vida, is best known for her appearances on television comedies, Mind of Mencia on Comedy Central, Jimmy Kimmel Live on ABC, and The Mindy Project, formerly on Fox. Now, she was most recently featured in Variety for her new movie, multi-award-winning filmmaker Harley Wallen's Abeyance. Abeyance, did I say it right?
Abeyance.
Abeyance. What does that mean?
You know, I Googled it. It's very interesting, but I think I have to Google it again. Especially because I'm talking to a doctor here, so I don't know. I think I give an elementary version. I like the way you pronounce it more, though, personally, but hey.
I do too, actually, but you know, we can chop up the word. We'll just come up with whatever we want. Who cares?
Yeah.
Anyway,
Abeyance, according to Dr. Fujian Zane.
Yes. I like that a lot more. Yes. We'll just make up our own word. Yeah. She also co-stars alongside Scott Taylor Compton, Richard Tyson, Billy Wirth, Mel Novak, and Yann Burch. These projects cap off a number of successes for the versatile starlet. You just wrapped up a supporting role in Nation's Fire opposite two-time Oscar nominee Bruce Stern, Emmy winner Jill Billows, and Lawrence Landon and UFC champion Chuck Liddell. Her other film, the much buzzed about Holly Terror, opposite Novak and Christine DeBell. She's gotten local and national and international press from this project and was billed as the Persian Linda Blair from her work in this role. My God, Vida, you are busy, girl. What's up? What are you up to now?
Oh, doctor, just trying to work it. You know, it's been a great summer ever since, the gift of being cast in Abeyance, and you interviewed the fabulous Harley Wallen, and you did such a good job. So, I owe many thanks to him, and I keep telling him and the others on that film that working with Jan and Richard and all the other actors and being directed by him was like a life-affirming experience. And after that, it just opened a lot of doors. I think being in Variety really helps. I feel like my advice to young actors is get listed in Variety or The Hollywood Reporter, because then the phones will be ringing off the hook. So it's been a flurry of meetings, auditions on camera for voiceover, direct offers, knock on wood to the wall, and in a once in a blue moon. So it's been a wild ride, and I shot two other feature films since then. So it's just been an exciting wow. time for me.
So tell us about the two that you just shot, and when can we see them?
Sure. Well, I want to do plug a little more for Abeyance. Abeyance is sci-fi. I can't really reveal much, but it's about it's a sci-fi thriller, and it's based on a true story in China where they were going to replace someone's head with someone's body. Mm-hmm. So this film explores, without giving too much away, the ethical reasoning behind people becoming other people. You know, I, for example, am replaced by a very, attractive, hottie-totty blonde woman, but I do it for devious means. So, I go under this disguise, to hide my evil doings. And this film, what I really like about it is it could have just been a scary film, but Harley really explores the psychological and moral complications of things. So I thought that was very interesting, especially in this day and age of the internet and social media and, hiding behind the internet and, social media bullies and all this stuff that's going on in our world today. So I think it's a very timely subject. And so that's Abeyance. And then also it was great working, of course, with Richard Tyson, Jan Birch, Mal Novak, Scout Taylor Compton, Billy Wirth, the lovely Katie Wallen. So it was a wonderful cast. My other film that I shot recently was another guest that you had, the fabulous Dustin Ferguson. Mm-hmm. I just shot Runaway Nightmare, and it's based on like those 80s, without giving again too much away, those 80s after school specials. It's got a Halloween kind of twist, so it'll probably be released on Halloween. And it's about this girl who's a runaway, just like in an ABC school special. I don't know if your listeners grew up watching them, but there's always like a redeeming quality at the end. But this is a Dustin Ferguson horror film, so who knows if there's a redeeming quality. But when you turn on the TV and there's a commercial, I'm one of the fake commercials in the movie. And it's a period piece, and it's the 1980s. So I have the cameo role in this film. But what I really enjoyed was I went through all my mom saves everything, all her 1980s clothes, all her 1980s jewelry. I went to the CVS. I stocked up on like Wet n Wild cosmetics, I guess was big in the 80s. I got blue eyeshadow. I got pink gloss lipstick, just getting into the persona and the character. And I'm this crazy lady, this desperate woman who calls a psychic hotline. I was originally supposed to be a psychic, but the commercials where you call into the psychic hotline are much better because there's like a tint of desperation.
Yes.
That was yes. That was Runaway Nightmare. And the lead actress in the film is a lovely Donna Lee Heising, is a very well-known cult horror scream queen. And I've worked with Donna before on Dustin's other films. And also just, you know, in my travails in Hollywood, she's a really renowned actress. She was also a model. She was one of the first Miss Chinatowns in Los Angeles. So she's she's a very renowned, noted actress. So it was great to work with Donna as well. And I also shot another film called The Untimely Demise of Miranda Vale, yet another horror movie. And I have I'm a young mom, and I have a very troubled daughter who's not troubled, but she gets possessed. So in Holy Terror, I say that I was possessed. Now in this movie, my child is possessed. So I get to explore possessions from multiple, multitudes.
Perspectives.
Yes. So that was really interesting to film, and just a wonderful cast. And by the way, our prop guy was half Persian.
Oh.
And a real character. I can't think of his name. But
was he also possessed?
You would think he was, because I think he's half Persian, half Danish, or something really quirky like Norwegian. And I didn't think, I thought, the name was really Persian. I have to think of the name. But when I went on set, I was like expecting this really like Iduni looking guy. And there was a guy wearing because we're shooting, I guess, you know, the 80s are really in. And this really wasn't a period piece, this one, but what was this kid's name? He's wearing a t-shirt that said VHS Forever. And I was like, God, I was thinking that would be like a great t-shirt for Dustin. But
definitely.
The kid's name was, the art director is Bijan. God, Bijan, what is your name? Anyways, Bijan, he's an artiste. He's like a total artiste. And he has like art openings in New York.
Beautiful. Vida, I know that you're also a comedian, right?
A bit. You know, I'm more of an improviser and sketch comic. I was actually having this conversation with an actor friend of mine. I tried stand-up. I find stand-up to be very challenging. It's very challenging for women, and it's very challenging for minorities. So for women and minorities, it's doubly challenging. So I tip my hat off to, you know, other comics that are female, and of course, you know, different minorities, especially Middle Eastern, because it can't be easy. There's some great Middle Eastern comics out there, but I'm sure there's a lot of, if you will, machismo in the room. So, you know, I'm more of an improviser and sketch comedy person. I studied at UCB Upright Citizen Brigade. It was started by Amy Poehler and a bunch of others. She was on SNL. So that's more my shtick, as they
say. Who do you have to become when you're doing the comedy improv versus who you are at all of these latest thriller movies that are really like horror movies, some of them? Who do you have to be? Which Vida do you have to pull up, and which one it feels like it, you know, is showing up in each role?
It's interesting you say that. I feel like in comedy, it's based on oneself, especially in improv, because you're on the spot. And I used to be a journalist, so the improv was very handy. But I find that in character-based work, like, you have to be the character. You know, it's all about, you know, Meisner, Stanislavski, all the great coaches. You have to, like, presume the life of the character. So, you know, it's a lot of character work and a lot of research. And, you know, I think for me, one goes through different things as a character actor. And lately it's been the young mom thing, which I think is very interesting because I don't have any children, but but it was a delight because, you know, I would go home and not worry about my non-child. So that was nice. But, you know, it's just a multitude of characters, and it's whatever I feel. I find that, like, I started out in comedy, so I really enjoy comedy. But a lot of these horror movies, there's a comedic element to it. Like in Runaway Nightmare, I mean, my bit at least was comedic. And I'm also doing another film with Dustin Ferguson called Robo-Woman. And I joke that I used to do, for the updated version of RoboCop, there was like a revamped version. I did the voiceover for that. So it's funny, I did the voiceover for RoboCop, but now I'm going to be have a role for RoboWoman. And again, once again, it stars it's a great cast, the amazing Donna Lee Heising, Brink Stevens, who's another scream queen from Slumber Party Massacre, Mel Novak, who's incredible from Bruce Lee's Game of Death. Just a great, great cast. God, so many others. Sue Price, she was in the original Nemesis 2 through 5, and that's a sci-fi franchise. Just a lot of great actors. Gregory Blair, Peter Stickles, just a wonderful, wonderful cast. Aki Aliong, who's a renowned Asian American actor, probably Beautiful. One of the first Asian Americans on Broadway. So it's an honor to be working with these great people.
Now, for everybody who's listening, if you want to listen to our show with Dustin, just go back to my website, fujian.com, and go back to there's a YouTube channel. It's also, we have it on the archives and on my podcast, all of those. So go listen to the show we had with Dustin, and that you'll hear all about what he's done. It has been great to have you on the show, for people to see you, to get to know you. One last comment. You've only got a couple of seconds. What do you want everybody who's listening to know about you and where to find you?
Oh, sure. They can go to soveryvita.com or on social media, or Vida Ghaffari, VIDAGHAFF like Frank, ARI. And it was an absolute honor to be on your show, Doctor.
I want you to also go to the Jack of the, what is it that I want you to go? Because I think that when you're talking about Halloween, that you also need to go to this place, because they have amazing Halloween party, and I want you to go there with your group. And it's called the Jack of the Night. Okay. Ooh. Jack of the Night. It's a Halloween. It's in Calabasas, and it's in King Gillette Ranch in Calabasas. That's where it is. And they have a lot of the celebrities who are coming there. Matt Damon was there with his family. A lot of great celebrities were there. Go to knightsofthejack.com, knightsofthejack.com. They have it from, I think, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They're awesome. Go there and have fun. Meet the group who are creating all of it. It's the first time in Los Angeles. So join them also. It was awesome to have you. Thank you so much. And for all of you who are listening and watching us, create an amazing week for yourself and everyone. Until next show, bye-bye.